The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Okay, why don't we get started? It's 4 o'clock. That's Professor Parver, who is the head of our health law program at the law school and also teaches health law. And I am Professor Abramowitz. I direct our tax clinic. I teach employee benefits. And I don't think I've seen any of you, but I have. I teach contracts as well. And we're here to talk about labor, employment, and health law today. But before we do that, I am a firm believer in making sure everybody has a sound curriculum. You pay a lot of money for a law school education, and I think it's real important to have the building blocks. So as I'm sure you know, I mean, when you think about putting together a curriculum for next year, I mean, what do you think of as the basics that you're going to include? What? Criminal procedure, although that isn't that required?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so you know, that's a required course, but I'm talking about what do you think of as the basics or the you know, the bread and butter in the elective area?
Business associations.
Business associations is critical. You know, the legal implications of how one organizes is, I think, something you ought to be taking right off the bat. Anything else?
Evidence,
I think, is critical. It's, first of all, it's a prerequisite for many of the clinics, and for other clinics like mine, it is simply strongly suggested. To think as lawyers, as you read all these cases, it's important to understand what threshold of credibility our society thinks it takes for a piece of information to get admitted as evidence. And whether or not a case ultimately goes to trial, it's very important to understand that concept. And I strongly urge all of you, business associations, evidence, anything else? I think a basic tax course is also critical because tax drives an awful lot of transactions, and it tax drives not only big corporate transactions, but it drives individual transactions, purchasing a home, a divorce, okay? You need to understand the financial implications of that, which would include tax. So we've now got on our basics list business associations, evidence, of course, some basic tax. I think there are a number of other courses, and probably too many for you to take every possible one, but administrative law to me is a critical one to take. First of all, we're in Washington, and our government is largely an administrative one, and you would be remiss in not understanding the role of the administrative agencies, particularly if you're interested in labor, employee benefits, or health. So administrative law is a big one. Just given our current economic situation, I think bankruptcy is a huge one. I think people ought to have some sense of bankruptcy and or creditors' rights. By the same token, basic course in sales and secure transactions. I think they're separated here, one or the other, or both. But so we've now got on our list of general literacy, business associations, a basic course in tax, administrative law. What else did we? Evidence.
Bankruptcy.
I said sales and or secure transactions, some sort of further uniform commercial code course. And if you're or negotiable instruments, one of those at least to sort of further expose you to the uniform commercial code. you know, depending on where you may be taking a bar exam, there may be a family law course which may be of interest to you, a conflict of laws course. My own sense is that you want to take as much as possible. You're paying a lot of tuition, so you really want to cram in as much as you can. You know, it's sort of counter to the usual student mode, which is, how little can I get by with? My view is, you're paying a lot of money, you know, pack it in, it'll help you. So there are those basic courses, all of which are going to have some relevance to almost any discipline you're interested in. And I'm assuming, again, everyone is here because they have an interest in either labor, employee benefits, or health. No? You're here for the general. Okay. So maybe we haven't done quite enough on the general yet. Any other things you think might be important?
No, I guess I was trying to get some perspective on it.
Actually, if you're going to plan on being a Washington lawyer, rather than either go back home or wherever the job might take you, there's a course that's offered just in the summertime, and it's called the Federal Regulatory Process. And what the professors in that course do is really a survey of all the regulatory agencies and their areas of responsibility. So I'll do a segment on healthcare and healthcare reform, the way Congress and the Department of Health and Human Services work together to make public policy in the healthcare arena. And there's someone who talks about, you know, someone from the Food and Drug Administration, all the different federal agencies. And I think it's a 3-credit course, and it's offered just in the summertime. So if you're going to be a Washington lawyer in addition to administrative law, that's a course I'd highly recommend.
What is the difference between admin law and that course? Like, what's the main difference?
That's a more advanced level than, I mean, it doesn't go into the formalities of the Administrative Procedures Act, which is focused on extensively in administrative law. Rather, it's industry and agency based. So it's more a survey of the different regulatory agencies in the country.
I don't think you were suggesting it was a substitute for administrative law.
Yeah, it's more advanced.
Yeah, basic administrative law and exposure to the Administrative Procedure Act, I think, is critical. And whether or not you stay here, even if you go back to your home states or some other state, if you're practicing at the state level, the role of administrative agencies is huge. So we've got that. You know, there are a number of other very conflict of law is a course you may be interested in. A general banking type course. There are a number of them that if you were to put together, and I'm available, I know Professor Parver is available, this is just on the general stuff. If you wanted to say, are there any holes? Here's what I plan to do. I'm sure we and a host of other people would be happy to take a look at what you propose to take. International law, somebody said they're taking it as a survey in the 1L course. You know, the world we live in is either going to be increasingly international or increasingly insular. Time will tell. But it's certainly important to understand what's going on beyond our borders. Most of the manufactured products we're looking at ain't manufactured here, right? So most of our source of our primary source of capital for this country is China. So understanding cultural differences and legal systems is a big one. Any other questions before we get down to what we were assigned to do here? And I'm going
to
let you start because you look like...
like I'm tumbling down. Again, I apologize for in my voice. The health law opportunities offered today are numerous, abundant at WCL, unlike years past. We offer, and I've left handouts on the side of the room, we offer from 5 to 7 courses a semester. And we also have a summer course that cover a wide range of subjects, from a basic health law program to genetics, bioethics, public health, international health and human rights, legal issues in fraud and abuse, food and drug law, disability rights. So there's a huge selection of courses that are offered that you can take in addition to the core curriculum. And there are courses offered in the evening as well as during the day, primarily because we want to be able to have the students who are working during the day who are interested in health care law attend the courses, and also because we pull a lot from the Washington community of healthcare practitioners. The adjuncts that come and teach here are all experts in their field, and they work during the day, and so they can just come and teach in the evening. In addition, there's a very active student health law organization. It's called the Health Law and Policy Initiative. The membership is over 50 students, and there are various programs that are put on by the student association if you're interested in becoming involved with that. There is a publication, and you might have seen this around the school. It's published twice a year, once each semester, and there is an editorial board of about 25 people who work on this brief. So that's another opportunity if you're interested in healthcare law and can't take more than maybe a course a semester, but you still want to learn more about the issue. For 1 week every summer, this coming up summer, it's the week of June 15th, we have a Health Law and Policy Institute where we have the ability to give you 3 credits. There are 7 courses, and the bulletin is also on the material on the desk over there. I'm always, available for independent studies. I have a lot of students doing research projects with me, which is something that might be of interest to you, not just to fulfill your upper level writing requirement, but if you want to get in depth in an issue in the healthcare area, that's something that you can consider doing. I have a dean's fellow every semester, a research assistant in the summertime, and so there's ample opportunity to really, hone in on a specific area of healthcare law. It's a seventh of the economy, the healthcare industry. There are tons of jobs. Here in Washington, in the administration, in the Department of Health and Human Services, the Medicare Agency, the Food and Drug Administration, NIH, the Institute of Medicine, Congress has several health committees, subcommittees. They all have lawyers working in those particular entities. Of course, there's private law firms, public interest. There's an association, at least in Washington, for every medical condition you can think of, for every kind of healthcare professional you can think of, in the hundreds. And they all have lawyers. If you've you had an interest in real estate, I wouldn't recommend that in these days because the way the market is in that particular sector. But if you have an interest in healthcare, you could feel very comfortable in knowing you're going to get a job We have.
And if you're interested in real estate, you might be interested in real estate for healthcare properties, which
right.
is a very narrow niche
right.
because
and,
that
and
may be the best one going.
And if you think to yourself, what is health law? It's law that is geared to helping entities, industries, professionals in the healthcare arena. So healthcare lawyers work for hospitals and nursing homes, physicians, every kind of healthcare practitioner you can think of who needs advice on contracts that they're negotiating on, if they get into trouble, how to be protected. There are a lot of laws that govern the healthcare field and severe consequences if providers don't adhere to the laws. That's a great deal of the kind of work that I used to do when I was practicing law. I retired in 2004 from the partnership of Dickstein Shapiro, which is a pretty large firm, and I headed the healthcare practice there. And we had clients who, you know, needed our work in the criminal law area, in putting together business ventures, in working with intellectual property lawyers for patents. There's, you know, whatever you can think of that a lawyer would need to do, just think of it in terms of helping someone in the healthcare professions or entities, and that's what health law is. And of course, the intersection between
well,
our
that's
two
the
fields.
Segue. I'll start and then okay. we'll take questions together. I teach in the employee benefits area, but before I get to that, because we don't have a representative here, I know some of you are interested in labor law as well. Traditional labor law is offered. There's a course in labor law which involves, New Deal legislation involving collective bargaining, and that's taught either by Professor Carl or by an adjunct. We also have offered, I'm not sure whether it's, I should have checked, and I apologize for not doing so, fall or spring, there's usually a course on employment in the public sector, which is worthwhile thinking about. Anyone who is interested in any sort of employment should be thinking about, and if you remember from contracts, I know at least one person does, remember contracts of employment are usually at will unless there is some overriding legislation, which there is in the area of, for example, disabilities and other kinds of discrimination, race, gender, what have you, so Title VII type issues. So we do offer, there's a Title VII course, we do offer a disability rights course, and there's in fact a disability rights clinic where there is hands-on experiential work in the disability rights area. So that is that perspective. You can't possibly be interested in labor law without understanding business associations. You need to take it. Having said that, coming back to the segue between health and employee benefits is sort of one of those areas that touches on many things. It is a course that I teach that is a statutory-based course on the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, ERISA, and ERISA governs many things. First of all, it governs pension plans. It governs various types of deferred compensation, and it governs health plans that are provided in the employment context. You all know health insurance is provided in the employment context. So the way in which that is done and the rules to which an employer is subject and the methodology or avenues for relief if you believe you haven't gotten what you're entitled to are all prescribed by the ERISA statute. So that is the intersection between healthcare law and employee benefits or ERISA and labor law. In the employee benefits area, this room is set up because today it's also an area where there are jobs. The ERISA course, which I teach, I like to say it really touches on many areas. We were talking about general curriculum before. To understand ERISA, it involves some notion of the tax code because many of the benefits are driven by tax incentives for the employer and, in some case, the employee. It is very heavily labor law. It's governed by labor law, which spells out rights of the employee and enforcement opportunities for the law, what substantive rights you have and how you can go about enforcing them. It's an exposure to trust law. That's one we missed on the general list, trust and estate law, understanding the concept of a trust in the fiduciary relationship, which you will examine certainly in business associations, but we're going to examine in spades in the ERISA course. Bankruptcy is a huge piece of ERISA because many employers find themselves underwater because of their pension costs, and pension, very much like tort, has become a reason for people to seek the dumping of liabilities in the bankruptcy context. You've all been reading a little bit about General Motors. That's pension cost is only part of their problem. They've got
healthcare costs.
Healthcare costs.
Really,
I was going to say,
severe.
And of course, bad design, but we're not going
there. Yeah.
So, you know, this sort of touches on so many areas. Also, in the ERISA area, I like to tell students that there are lots of job opportunities in the financial sector because the largest single piece of Wall Street, at least when it did exist, was investment through institutional investors, primarily pension plans, which accounted for between $10 and $18 trillion on Wall Street, again, before recent times. So this course explains the role of the pension lawyer in lots of corporate issuances. How can you attract capital from pension plans, understanding the rules to which they are subject for purposes of investment? We also use, I like to use the ERISA course as an opportunity to understand corporate reporting and going through an annual report from a corporation and trying to demystify, if you will, a little bit Wall Street offerings. So that is the ERISA course, which I teach. We have clinical programs where you get exposure to some of the things we've been talking about. We have a general practice clinic that does some healthcare work, does bankruptcy work. I don't think they do official labor work, i.e. the National Labor Relations Board, but I do think they probably handle Title VII. We have a women in the law clinic that most assuredly handles discrimination cases. Our tax clinic, we often handle the fallout of many of these cases, maybe the tax consequences of the proceeds of some of this litigation. That's about it for now. Why don't we open it up and let you ask some questions? Anybody? What did we miss?
All of these courses that I covered in the summer course are those also courses that you can take during the semester?
No. Some of them are not offered. There's an introductory course on medicine for lawyers for those of you who might be interested in medical liability and negligence and medical malpractice. That course is only offered in the summer. Genetics had been offered in the spring. Next spring we will not offer it, but it will be offered this summer. Bioethics will be offered in the fall. This is just an introductory course in bioethics.
Just if I can, on that subject matter, my undergraduate alma mater had a Washington sort of fundraiser last week. And it was a very forward-looking sort of think tank program, and they pulled together people from four different disciplines to sort of just pontificate about the future. And of course, it was the bioethicist who was the leading person. They brought him in from the med school together with undergraduate people. And bioethics is huge stuff, folks. I mean, huge stuff. So,
right. The course on legal issues in healthcare fraud and abuse is only offered in the summertime. And two of the courses are offered in the evening. If you have jobs this summer that won't allow you to take any of these courses during the day, there are two courses you can choose from in the evening. The course on international health and human rights is just offered in the summer. And that's an interesting course. We have a an alum who is a specialist in international healthcare law for the Pan American area, and he's with the Pan American Health Organization, PAHO, which is part of the World Health Organization. PAHO is based here in Washington, and so he's going to be one of the teachers for that course. And if you go on the web in summer programs, you can link into the health law program, and you'll have a listing of the exact schedules, which days of the week, and the times that all the courses are offered.
And all of these are just intro, since it's only a week, all of those are just intro to, like, it doesn't cover, like, what would be covered during the semester.
For the courses that have companion courses offered in either the fall or the spring, they are just introductory courses. For the courses that that are only a summer course, it's much more in depth. It's really intense. I mean, you need 700 minutes for a credit, and so the courses start like 8 or 8:30 in the morning, and they go till 5:30 in the afternoon, with just a small break for lunch in the same room. So it's really two intense days for all of these courses. The evening courses are from 6 till 9 p.m. Four nights, and it's pretty much nonstop with a couple of breaks, a few minute breaks.
If there are courses, by the way, that anyone sees that are offered, for example, in the day, and you're an evening student and have an interest in seeing it offered at night, absolutely no guarantees, but there's no harm in asking. Go to the registrar, go to the person who's teaching it and saying, is there any way you can change the time? Is this ever offered in the evening? So you really need to plan ahead. You need to look at your course catalog and see if this works for me, or if it's going to work for me, or is there some adjustment I might seek? I mean, my ERISA course I teach also late afternoon to be able to accommodate both day and evening students.
I'm doing that this year for my legislative course. If you're interested in legislation at all, interested in the legislative process, we developed a course 2 years ago called the healthcare federal legislative and regulatory process, and it's a two-credit course. It had been offered in the evenings, but we're and I team teach it with a professor who's just had her second child, and so she needs to be able to be home for dinner, and so we're teaching it from 4 until 6 on, I think, Wednesdays, if I'm not mistaken. But that's a really interesting course, because what we do is we take several major pieces of healthcare legislation that have been enacted over the last 10 years, and we trace these laws through from the inception of the law, through the whole legislative process, the lobbying that goes into it, then what happens after the president signs the law, and the regulatory agency has to promulgate regulations. And then we always end each segment, and we're doing four different laws this coming up fall. We then have private practicing lawyers come in and talk about the current status. I mean, how their clients are functioning within the legislative and regulatory framework. And it's a very interesting course. It's a skills-based course, because you learn a lot about the lobbying process. You have to write advocacy pieces, and for each segment there's a written assignment, and the final is a hypothetical. It's an in-class final, and it's a role-playing exercise. We create a fictitious law, and we assign roles: senator, congressman, public interest group, and we go through a whole Senate hearing, And it's a lot of fun, it really is. And if you're at all interested in the legislative process, I highly recommend that. Then there's the basic health law primer, and that's kind of an introductory course on healthcare law.
Are there clinics associated with the health law field?
There's the disability rights clinic, thus far is the only clinic that has as its topic a healthcare related area. But also, as Professor Abramowitz said, in the civil practice clinic, there are sometimes healthcare related issues and clients who come in who
need. Also, women in law. Mm. And, you know, you find strange intersections. Our tax clinic is partnered with the Whitman Walker Clinic, and which is an HIV/AIDS clinic, and that's a very fruitful source of inventory for tax issues for us, but our students are often working with people who are chronically ill. So, I mean, your interest in health law may be in health law per se, or in providing tangential sorts of legal services for people with health issues. So.
And as a 1L, rising 2L, I really recommend if you can possibly take this 1 week intensive program. It's not anything that you won't be able to tackle. I mean, I think that it's 1Ls who have done this have found it to be very, very interesting and good introductory material for the next year. Other questions?
Professor Parver also mentioned skills-based course. Obviously, clinic is one form of skills-based course, but you ought to ask yourself, as you're going through and taking other courses that aren't so obviously so, whether or not they are skills-based. Because you certainly want to have a smattering of skills-based courses, at least.
Right, and not just theoretical courses. It will make you a better lawyer upon graduation, rather than waiting for your first year or two of internship to be over. Once you're in your job, it will make you much more comfortable if you've actually drafted parts of a contract or other types of written pieces.
And you ought to check on whatever bar you're planning on taking, because the bars are generally testing on skills also these days.
Is the advanced classes that you were talking about, like the regulatory and legislative process class, would you not recommend taking that class without also taking the basic healthcare class? Or would it be okay to take the basic class later?
Yeah, I think so. A lot of the courses touch on similar material, and sometimes even the cases are the same. I know when I was in law school, I remember, studying a class in a court, a case in either civil procedure or criminal law, and then studying the same case in constitutional. And at first, I didn't understand the connection, but you kind of build upon like stepping stones, and that's what you'll do when you take a course. And even if you haven't had the primer, you'll still touch on cases, issues that will repeat themselves in other courses that you might study. I mean, I didn't put together, and I don't know if you were the same way, but I didn't put together civil procedure until I was studying for the exam, because we didn't, in those days, ever have concrete examples of, what does a motion for summary judgment look like? We read about it. What are interrogatories? What's a deposition? What does it look like when you do these things? And it finally clicked. I mean, you just don't want to start working without ever having, seen any of this material. So, and I don't know, you teach contracts, right? And do the students have at least a chance to draft anything, or?
No.
They don't. Yeah.
But they do have a chance to read contracts.
Yes.
No, read a contract usually.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we certainly can point out the problems other people have in drafting them.
Right.
It's easier to shoot than to get shot at, right? That's the first rule of law school.
You can ask general questions, too. We could try to help you out. It's a bit daunting when you're planning out your next few years. And hopefully these sessions will make it a little less intimidating. It's good to go in with a plan. If you know you have a general idea of what you would like to do. But as Professor Abramowitz said in the beginning, it's important, though, to intersperse amongst all these specialty areas the core curriculum that you'll need, not just to take the bar exam, but to practice law intelligently.
If you want to sort of style yourself as having a concentration, whether it's in health or labor or ERISA or tax or whatever it might be, commercial law, there's so many ways to think about it strategically. First, you can think about the courses you might take. Second, would you want a clinic? Third, are there extracurricular activities? Is there some sort of written or scholarly piece, as there is here, an opportunity to work there? Is there a moot court? By the way, there's a moot court for any subject you can think of, even including comatose tort victims, I think. But in any event, you know, the moot court board decides, it's within their jurisdiction to decide each year which competitions they will go to, whether they're going to go to an international or a securities law. If you have an interest, get involved. Get involved and do it. There are trial advocacy programs. There are all sorts of student advocacy groups that you might find you can match to your own personal interest. I urge you to please do that. It's an important thing to do. I know I'm headed off to a fundraiser tomorrow night for something called Roots and Wings. One of my tax clinic students had studied in Guatemala and saw it as his personal mission to raise funds to educate the indigent with a college education, which apparently costs $29 a semester. And he has just gotten the dean's support and has a huge fundraiser going on at the Organization of American States tomorrow night. Now, his interest is international law and education. So there are ways to do this and to be proactive. Finding a professor who's doing research in an area that you are interested in, getting an externship in an office that is of interest to you. I think, given the economy, the burden is going to fall even more heavily on you to sell yourselves 2 and 3 years from now. We all know that. Nobody wanted it that way. It's not anything anybody planned. It's just the way it is. So I think you need to be strategic about the job search, and it's not too early to start.
Right, and I don't see it changing much in the next few years.
Any 2Ls here? I always think it's falls hardest on the 2Ls because the 3Ls have all been pushed back on their start date, right? So if you're a 1L, you can go, not me. The 2Ls are going to get squeezed out.
I think we're going to see a lot more onesies and twosies, people just getting out of law school and starting their own firms. And so the more information you can take while you're in law school, the better off you'll be.
And you know, that may be a healthy thing. I mean, we might speculate on whether or not the model for large law firms has become too top-heavy, that it fell of its own weight. Most particularly in an area that's only getting a little bit of conversation right now, but just in the area of hourly billing, where it just becomes so beyond the reach of so many. So maybe the onesie and twosie is, maybe we sort of start rebuilding the profession. I think there are going to be a lot of very radical changes. So it behooves you to sort of take control as best you can of your destiny, and to keep your eyes and ears open for all opportunities that are out there.
other issues, questions, don't be shy. This is the time for you to ask.
Well, we're available. You can find us. I'm under A. Professor Parver's under P. And we're both very willing to, and our doors are open, so please feel free to stop by.
If you want to take any materials in the
healthcare
area.
I'm really sorry.